You're listening to the Popmatic Podcast for August 27th, 2014. And you're hot right now because it's the dog days of summer. Who's hot?
I'm hot.
You hot?
I'm also hot.
You hot?
I'm burning up.
All right.
Sitting in a puddle of my own sweat.
Sexy.
Yeah, that's right.
I just peeled myself off this vinyl bus seat.
Yeah.
Like I said, this is the Popmatic Podcast, where you can rock out with your library card out. Who's here today?
Amanda's here.
Amanda's here as well. Oh, and Mike, too.
And Bill's here.
And I am Brian, and I am here today. So we pulled a little bait and switch. It is the Dog Days of Summer episode, but this episode is not about dogs. It's all about the heat, because it is hot during the dog days of summer. So we're going to tell you about hot things, as hot as four nerds sitting in a small room talking about books can get.
Ooh, that's pretty hot.
So hot.
Glad I
so
came
cool.
today.
It's hot.
Amanda, what's hot?
Well, I hate summer. I really do. I hate when it gets really hot outside and you can't even go out, you can't even breathe when you walk out your door. So when it does get 90 degrees plus, I like to hide inside in the air conditioning the way the good Lord intended. And what better way to pass the time than to read a good book? And if that book happens to be racy hot instead of sweaty hot, more the better. So I want to tell you about a series that I've been reading. You could call it erotica, that would not be inappropriate. It's called Sinners on... Yeah, we need, like, funky music in the background.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, baby.
Yeah. It's called Sinners on Tour. It's by Olivia Cunning. It's about a heavy metal rock band. Obviously, they're called Sinners. And it's about them when they're on tour. And so you can imagine all the hijinks that they get up to.
Ooh.
So the first one in the series is called Backstage Pass. The second one is Rock Hard. Then you have Hot Ticket. These are great names. Hot Ticket. It gets a little weird. So the fourth one that was published is called Double Time, and the fifth one that was published is called Wicked Beat. But you should really read them in reverse order, because I'm not really sure why she published them like that, because Wicked Beat the events in Wicked Beat come before Double Time, so that was weird. So I read them in the chronological order as opposed to publishing order. Those were the first original five that came out. She just released a new one because fans were like, well, what happens after that? So she wrote one called Sinners at the Altar, which we have in book form. I don't know that we have that in ebook form yet. And then she's going to release one more called Sinners in Paradise that's coming out later. It's not published yet. So my favorite part about these, so everybody, each book has a different character, like the guitar player and the drummer and the lead singer and, you know, all that. And always something really bad happens. They have to go to the hospital and then the girls come in and save them. But it's so funny because her girls have like horrendous names. Like the girl in the first book, her name is Myrna.
Myrna?
Yeah, and then one of the other girls later, her name is Aggie, which is short for Agatha. And I'm like, what did she do? Go to 1950s and look up your housewife names?
So these are like hot girls.
Yeah, they're hot. Yeah. Okay. Like hot enough to like, you know, get these rowdy band guys to marry her. But her name is Myrna.
Okay. Wow, that's really not hot.
So like hot girls with
old lady names.
Old lady names.
I picked like names awesome.
Yeah. So that was enjoyable. So a lot of times these books can have really weird covers that you're thinking, Amanda, these sound great, but I will be embarrassed to read that. Well, good news, because they come in ebook. So you can download them to your Kindle or your Nook and have your nice little Nook there, and people will think that you're smart reading about, you know, current events and world things, but really you're reading about Sinners on Tour.
Double time.
That's right. Hot ticket. If you need something hot while it's hot outside, I definitely recommend these. They won't change your life, but they're a good way to pass a couple hours.
You know, explosion in the popularity of erotica with the advent of e-reading and e-reading devices. And then also, if you want air conditioning, every Nashville Public Library branch, awesome air conditioning. Good place to hang out and read a book.
Free books.
do it. Go to a program.
Cool temperatures. All right, Mr. Bill.
Well, when the topic of dog days was going to be the theme of today's podcast, my mind went straight to one of my favorite movies, Dog Day Afternoon, released in 1975. This movie was directed by Sidney Lumet, written by Frank Pearson. It stars Al Pacino, John Cazale, Charles Durning. And Dog Day Afternoon, for those not familiar with it, is a heist film. It's also a comedy. It's also a melodrama. Basically what it's about this guy named Sonny, played by Al Pacino, who robs a bank so his wife can have a sex change operation. Oh, did I tell you that it was based on a true story, too?
Of course it was.
You know something, people? You're going to be remembered the rest of your lives for the day you got held up and kidnapped.
At approximately 3 p.m. on August 22nd, 1972, Sonny Wurzik and Sal Naturale entered the First Brooklyn Savings Bank and attempted a robbery.
My face! Nobody move! Get over there!
The attempt failed.
There's no money here.
They picked it up this afternoon. There's only $1,100.
This is too much.
It's for you.
What?
The police arrived.
This is Detective Sergeant Eugene Moretti. What are you doing in there?
For the people of the neighborhood, it was a sideshow.
Sonny!
But for Sonny and Sal, the hostages, and the cops, it was a dog day afternoon.
It's all a whim. Rob a bank.
I had a plan.
WNEW plays all the hits.
Will you keep away from this bank or we're going to start throwing bodies out the front door one at a time?
I'm a Catholic and I don't want to hurt anybody, understand?
How about letting the people out of the bank?
They're keeping me alive. I'm going to let him out.
Sir, can you tell me what the situation is?
All right, who has to go to the bathroom?
Sonny, come on out!
Yeah! It's just a freak show to them anyway.
The most you're going to get is 5 years. You get out in 1 year, huh?
Kiss me. I mean, I don't know about that guy out there.
Hello, Sonny. You're on the air.
Sonny, Jesus, I was watching it on TV.
Go back there, man!
Why didn't he tell me he needed money?
He wants to kill me so bad he can taste it.
Why rob a bank when you got a sucker for a mother?
You're starting to get on my nerves.
See that? Put it in your holster!
We're entertainment, right? What do you got for us?
Alaska! Alaska!
I ain't going back to that prison, Sonny.
Remember, Alaska! Down! They're coming in the back!
I'm here with my partner and 9 other people. See, we're dying.
Don't, sir!
You're gonna see our brains on a sidewalk. They're gonna spill our guts out. Shouldn't let something like that spoil your fun.
Hey, don't fire!
I can't stand you being a bank robber, Sonny.
What I'm talking, I'm trying to talk to you!
Mom, what are you doing down here?
Run, son.
Where am I gonna run?
Algeria?
Yeah, they got a Howard Johnson's there, so I'm going. One.
We get a helicopter here.
Two.
Takes us to a jet.
Three. I'm flying to the tropics. We did it.
Al Pacino. Dog Day Afternoon. A true story.
Sidney Lumet, the director of the movie, said the theme of the movie is the freaks are just like us. He told the actors to keep it real, make everything realistic. So if you've never seen Dog Day Afternoon, now would be a good time. Oddly enough, this past week at the Bell Court, they had a documentary called The Dog. It was about the actual bank robber. His name is, I'm going to mess this up, but John Wojcicki. I'm going to say I don't believe that's correct. I must tell you that I went to the Virginia Film Festival several years ago, and the writer, Frank Pearson, and the actual bank robber was there, John Wojcicki. And it was quite fascinating, especially the Frank Pearson aspects. He talked about the writing of the movie and things of that nature. One story, I'll tell you, Frank Pearson, that this movie John Wojcicki was in prison, put his life in danger. There's a scene in it where Al Pacino is talking to an FBI agent, and he said, "Don't worry about Sal, we'll take care of him." The Pacino character, he was just playing a mind game with him. But when he goes back in and talks to Sal, said, "What was that all about?" And he says, "Oh, nothing, it was nothing." And that was the only time he lied in the movie. Well, that scene put him in danger. And he had to be put in solitary confinement. And Frank Pearson found out there was a prison newspaper and wrote an article about screenwriting and used that as something that, you know, it would just be a little lie that says just something to make the movie more interesting, and it got him out of solitary confinement. Well, it was all interesting, and oddly enough, on the last day of the festival, I actually met the actual character. The last film was The Cooler. I was looking at that in the movie theater, and there he was just sitting by himself, and I went up and shook his hand, and so you could tell something was not right with him, and he said he would have liked to have been on the panels a little bit more, and I think they didn't let him because he was really kind of nuts. But he was really kind of a strange man. But I always liked Dog Day Afternoon. It took place in August, I think, of 1972, 73. The reason why they made the movie was the character looked just like Al Pacino. So always a favorite of mine. So Dog Day Afternoon, we still have in our collection. I highly recommend it. Mike?
Thank you, Bill. I watched both of those this weekend. I thought it was a nice double feature.
Uh-huh.
I actually thought he looked more like Robert De Niro.
Yeah.
You know, seeing the documentary. Anywho,
I thought today I would talk about one of my personal goals of the podcast is to recommend as wide a variety of items as I can. So today I thought I'd recommend a short story and a television episode. They're both centered around extreme heat causing violent behavior. Ooh. So the first one is called Fondly Fahrenheit. It's by Alfred Bester. It's found in an anthology called Virtual Unrealities, the short fiction of Alfred Bester. The story is about a guy who owns an android. Whenever the temperature, like, goes up above a certain point, the android goes insane and kills somebody. And it's pretty cool. Like, normally it's like, you know, beep, boop, I'm an android, beep, boop, whatever. And then, like, it goes over, like, 90 degrees, and it's like, and, like, starts, you know, getting all stabby. And every time it kills somebody, basically the guy's like, oh, no! And they, like, both run to, like, another planet and, like, take, and as the story progresses, they take more and more, like, menial jobs to, like, you know, lay low. But things always heat up. It's a pretty awesome story. I mean, I think about it still, like, you know, and I read it about 20 years ago. Alfred Bester is known nowadays for The Demolished Man, which is a really good book about a guy who commits murder in a society of telepaths. And The Star Is My Destination, which is basically The Count of Monte Cristo in space. Both of these are really good if you like classic science fiction, and both of which the Nashville Public Library has. I was also going to talk about today a television episode of Alfred Hitchcock Presents called Shopping for Death. Found on Season 1, Disc 2, which we have, where two retired insurance salesmen follow a loud, angry woman and gradually become more and more convinced that a combination of her erratic, angry behavior and the rising temperatures will cause somebody to murder her. They keep having, like the director keeps focusing in on, like, you know, certain things. Like, when she goes to the butcher shop, the butcher becomes more and more angry with her. And, like the camera will, like, focus on him, like, grasping a knife, you know, and that kind of thing. She's, like, she has a very henpecked husband, you know. And they're, like, insurance salesmen are, like, oh, no, the husband's gonna, like, you know, totally gonna kill her. And they like, have this big debate as to whether, like, warning her is a good idea or not. Don't spoil how it ends, but it's kind of chilling. Pretty cool. It was later adapted into a short story called Touched with Fire, which we have in the stories of Ray Bradbury. But I haven't read it, so, you know, I don't know if I could really recommend that, per se. I also like to mention that Ray Bradbury also had a really big fascination with, like, warm weather and violent behavior. There's a couple articles on the internet I'm going to send one to Brian, called Validating Ray Bradbury, Climate Change and High Temperatures Linked to Violent Behavior. You know, the too long didn't read version is crimes against people actually does rise with temperature, but crimes against property and stuff do not. So, you know, go figure. You become more angry.
I don't know. It's usually not a riot in the wintertime, but I could be historically incorrect. It usually happens in the summer.
There's that line in Body Heat where the lieutenant says, he's a cop. He says, business is always good in this type of weather. People start making up their own rules.
Oh, yeah. There you go. Cool.
Well, I would just say, too, since when we filmed this, is right in the middle of a big heat wave. I don't know if this will be resolved by the time this posts, but they're actually concerned about St. Louis this weekend because it's going to be 100 degrees there anyway, and so they're really concerned about this exploding this weekend when it's going to be so hot.
Get over there, will you? He wants to kill me so bad he can taste it.
Oh, God, I was going to kill
him. Attica! Attica!
Will you?
Attica!
Okay, I'm going to bring it back, but not cool it off at all. So I'm going to bend the rules a little bit. I'm going to talk about something the library does not have during this the main segment, but I'm going to talk about something the library does have and will not only does the library have the item that I will talk about during Tickle My Fancy, but it'll be like a key to many, many other things that you can get from the library.
Fancy.
But I'm going to bend the rules a little bit and talk about something the library doesn't have for the main segment. And what I want to talk about is the musician FKA Twigs, or formerly known as Twigs, or just Twigs. I saw this like weird album cover of this girl's face, but it was like looked like it was like painted or made of plastic or something. And I was like, what is that? And then finally, some other side on YouTube, I ended up like at one of her videos. And I was like, oh, that's what that album is. And the reason that I'm talking about her on the hot episode is because she's really hot right now. That album cover, I see it everywhere on all these websites. She just got interviewed in Billboard magazine. The album just got an awesome review on.
So Twigs is a chick.
FKA Twigs is a chick.
Not Twiggy.
Yeah, she's female. She is Twiggy, actually.
Oh.
She's a dancer, and she got the name Twigs because her joints would make noises when she moved.
Oh, creepy. Okay.
So gross. And she has a band though too. She fronts a band. So, and she's just really super hot right now. And if I had to describe her music, I'd say it's like experimental R&B, or I've heard the term like alien R&B. So it has like these like pop vocal hooks or like R&B hooks, but then like the backing tracks are just like experimental electronica. For me, it sounds like things that are like non-musical looped together, and that's what I love that. It's not really a song, or like non-musical things looped together into a song, and then she's singing these like pop hooks over it. I really like that. It reminds me of dubstep when dubstep first started, when dubstep was Burial and not Skrillex. And they're also music dweebs know that there used to be a genre called trip hop, or what music writers used to call trip hop, and it sounds like trip hop to me. Sounds like the best way that like old Tricky used to sound. Of course, that's the music, and I really, really like it. But also there are a lot of videos, and that was one of the reasons I feel okay about talking about this record, even though the library doesn't own it yet, was because the first two EPs, which four songs each, they're entirely on YouTube with videos made by her. The album, the LP version, will come out the day that this posts, I believe. And two of those songs with awesome videos are on YouTube as well. So I'll just link to her YouTube page. And the videos are extremely hot. Hot the same way that Sinners on Tour is hot.
Oh, and, well, FKA Twigs. Huh? Yeah. Let me write that down.
But just don't get too antsy just yet, because they're really, really sexy and they're not explicit. And I think that the reason this is that she used to be a dancer, like a professional dancer before she started recording music. So she knows about how expressive the body can be. So most of the videos are just bodies being manipulated or changed in some way. And they're all like super creepy and extremely weird. So like they're hot, but they're also like ominous and, weird. And so for the track, How's That? It's basically just like the freakiest scene in Under the Skin turned into like a 4-minute video.
Uh-huh.
So here's a little bit of How's That? Here's a sample.
Amazing.
Yeah, I know. Great, huh? And actually, I didn't pick a sample with one of those like sort of vocal hooks, but I just like that sort of like TikTok beat, so I picked that sample. And that video is like so weird. And then actually, the person that she most kind of reminds me of like new artists that are popular now, getting some buzz, is Grimes. And I love Grimes, and I've talked about Grimes before, but one of the things that I like about Grimes is that Grimes doesn't really sexualize herself or doesn't feel the need to like objectify her body in her videos or her music or anything. And I think that's a positive thing about Grimes. But FKA Twigs is definitely sexy, and all her songs are about sex. And I like that too. I think that's a positive thing about FKA Twigs. But actually, musically, they remind me a lot of each other. So like, as I've said, these pop vocal hooks with experimental electronic backing. So FKA Twigs, check her out. It's really good stuff.
You won't get in trouble for looking at it at the library. She's not that rowdy.
Oh, yeah.
No, yeah. You could watch the YouTube videos at the library. Though there is one, I don't know what's on it. I think there was one threw up a, this might contain things that are bad.
Not safe for work.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, but I watched, they're just really creepy. And sexy without being explicit.
Sexy and creepy.
Sounds like Brian.
seriously,
episode title here.
Sexy and creepy, just like Brian. Yes, yes,
Brian.
Yeah, yes, and I love her. This is the cool. I haven't been this excited about an artist since Grimes. And FKA Twigs will be in Nashville December 1st at the Mercy Lounge. All right, we're going to tell you what is tickling our fancy this week. You know, one of the things that ended up on the cutting room floor last week was that Robin Williams Inside the Actor's Studio is probably one of the best episodes of that show ever.
Oh, yeah. We mentioned that, I think, at some point.
We mentioned it at some point, but there wasn't any way to, cut that little snippet back into the rest of the show. So definitely, if you're interested in him, check that out. Because, you know, I had talked about the Marc Maron interview, but really the Marc Maron interview is really only interesting for the one really dark part where, you know, where Williams kind of reveals that suicide is part of his psyche. But if you actually want to talk about, you know, his methodology and his career and everything, that episode of Inside the Actor's Studio is probably where you want to go.
It is phenomenal. It's like an hour of improv, and an hour of interview. It's really great.
Not a bad deal. But Amanda?
Yes, Brian.
before we start, I'm going to say that I referenced four things that Mike talked about or wanted to talk about in the last episode during this episode. Though, if you're listening, it's in the sort of the end matter, the other three.
They're sneaky.
So I'm talking, no one's going to know what I'm talking about yet.
Yeah, I'm liking this micification of the podcast. It's just, Mike Maddick.
Oh, Mike all the time.
Yeah.
But, Amanda, what's tickling your fancy this week?
Mike.
Oh, shucks.
Tell me more. No, my best friend decided that we needed to go to the drive-in theater, and I thought that was great, because I don't know if you guys went to drive-ins when you were younger, but I always did. There was one about 20 minutes away, and there is one about 20 minutes away from Nashville, conveniently. It's called the Stardust Drive-In. It's over in Watertown, and it is open Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, so you don't even have to stay up that late for work. What it is, basically, you can take your car, it's $7.50 per person in your car. It's not $7.50 per car, which is sad, because that would have been really cheap. You get two movies. They have two screens, so you can pick which set of movies you want to watch. And the fun part is that you can bring in outside food. So we brought out this whole picnic. It does cost $6 for outside food, but it's way cheaper than their concession stand. We went, and we actually sat outside the car, because you used to when you were little. They had the little thing you hung on your window, the little speaker, so you could hear the movie. Well, now they've got you can broadcast it on your radio, and B, they've got speakers, so we could sit outside and hear it without having to be in the car trying to look around, the person in front of you if you're in the back seat, if you're watching the movie, if you're in the back seat. But, so the two movies that we saw were Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, because it was on first, and then the one I wanted to see, which was Into the Storm, which is about tornadoes and I love weather, and so that was the one I wanted to see. So we struggled through Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and I would really love it if somebody...
Art is terrible.
Yeah. If somebody who went voluntarily to see it could explain the ending to me, because it was dumb.
Oh, wow.
And I think the writers took a break, and they got their tech guys to fill in the writing, because they were on time schedule. So... it was horrible, and I have no idea. And my best friend looked at me at one point and goes, "Where'd that Asian girl go?" Because we hadn't seen her for 45 minutes.
Mike had jokingly said that Michael Bay ruins everything, but the Turtles remake is, I believe, produced by Platinum Dunes, his production company.
It's Michael Bay. Yes. Yeah. I saw his name on the screen. Yeah. I was like, okay.
Originally, they were going to be aliens, teenage alien mutant turtles.
Mm. So yeah, so I don't really. I watched it for. Luckily, it's short, so it's only 90 minutes. So I went potty, had a nice walk around the theater. But anyway, so then the
around
second
the
one.
Area.
It's small too, so I wasn't a very long walk.
A bunch of people walking around. Going,
The kids that were there liked it. They laughed, but. I still don't know what happened. Then the second one, The End of the Storm, was okay. It wasn't great, but I would like to have a public service announcement right now. If you are ever in a school or a building and there's a tornado coming and someone runs in and tells you to get in the school bus and drive away, do not do it. That is not safe. You are safer in the bathroom at the school than you are driving around on rubber and lumber that goes 45 mile an hour tracing, running down a tornado. So that's my comment. The drive-in was really fun, even though the movies weren't that great, but it's a beautiful setting. Like, there's just, we had a perfect night. It was almost chilly when we were sitting outside. So for August in Tennessee, the drive-in is very fun. So.
I agree. I've been out there and it is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to go.
You should.
Yeah. Cool.
Take popcorn.
Woo-hoo. So I just wonder too, like, the kids now know who the Ninja Turtles are?
I don't even know.
There's a cartoon on Nickelodeon.
No.
Like, is it a new cartoon?
There's a new cartoon.
There's a new cartoon.
Because that's how I know much from the old cartoon, not that I watched it, but I was at least aware of it.
My sister's boyfriend says it's great.
And
I'd be bothered to watch it.
And it was a comic book first.
Yes.
Before the cartoon.
Black and white comic.
Yeah. That was a lot, like, not for kids.
Yeah.
It was, like, a lot more like an adult sort of underground comic book. And then it became a Saturday morning cartoon. And then there were a series of movies. And now, new cartoon, new movies.
But they're still teenagers, which I don't really get. Apparently, you don't age.
You know, middle-aged mutant Ninja Turtles. Nobody really cares about, I guess.
I guess. They're not as fun. They just
you have to
home
stop
and read
ordering
books
pizza
and,
you know,
play cards all day.
Eat Raisin Bran.
The band Sonic Youth is called Sonic Youth, even though they're all in their 50s. Mm, so,
good point.
All right. I wanted to talk about something totally different, and hopefully, I can make it sound as fun as that.
just say Mike after every other word.
Yeah. Oh, then I'll pay attention.
This is something that Mike is actually probably interested in.
Oh boy. This is like my birthday.
So I wanted to tell you about a book called What Makes This Book So Great by Joe Walton. And you guys may remember Joe Walton from this book I talked about called Among Others, which swept the Science Fiction Awards a few years ago. And it was amazing. It was like one of my favorite books I've read in the past couple of years. So one of the things that you learn if you read Among Others, which is a fiction book, but it's also set like in the early 80s. So it's also this survey of like the best, most gnarly like 70s science fiction. And you sort of learn that Joe Walton has read every science fiction book in the history of the universe and every fantasy book in the history of the universe. So for a number of years, she actually has wrote a blog on Tor.com. So Tor.com is the website for the science fiction fantasy publisher Tor, but it's also sort of just like a web hub for like sci-fi fandom. So she wrote this blog where she would review old science fiction books. And she's really super smart, really knows her stuff. So they've taken the best of these and put them in a volume called What Makes This Book So Great. So the subtitle is rereading the classics of science fiction and fantasy, but, you know, she reads contemporary stuff too. There's stuff that goes back to the 19th century. She talks about Middlemarch and then all this broad survey of science fiction and fantasy. And what I really like about Joe Walton is that she's really extremely intelligent and insightful, but she doesn't write in an academic way. She writes in a very, like, casual, colloquial way. And all the reviews are really short. You can just like dip into it. And if you're like, what should I read? I don't know what to read about in science fiction or fantasy. You should maybe just, you know, dip into this book and then you would know. Yeah, check it out. What Makes This Book So Great? Rereading the Classics of Science Fiction and Fantasy by Joe Walton. And I just want to point out, we talked about how a lot of smart people, other than me, I used to play D&D and I used to be smart, but not anymore. Play role-playing games. And she actually got her start. Her very first books were writing role-playing game settings. And now she's this big-time author, at least in the genre ghetto of science fiction.
Okay. Tickling my fancy this week is comedian John Oliver. We have a new DVD in our collection called John Oliver Terrifying Times. And it's his innovative stand-up routine. The DVD comes with a warning. This stand-up performance will be delivered with a British accent, so be prepared for the words to come with more authority than you're used to. John Oliver has his own show on HBO called Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. It's on every Sunday night. He used to be a correspondent on The Daily Show. And when Jon Stewart left last summer to direct a movie, John Oliver filled in. And let me tell you, he nailed it. He was off the charts brilliant, and you could just see, because soon after he got this gig on HBO, it was like the guys at HBO said, geez, he's better than Stewart, so let's give him a job. I just highly recommend the DVD. I've always enjoyed it. It's got some cool extras. It's got some of his better correspondence when he's on The Daily Show. So I'm highly recommending John Oliver, Terrifying Times on DVD.
You know, I wonder if Jon Stewart regrets letting him fill in for him during that time, because then they stole him, right? Yeah. He's like, now he has his own show. It's like, oh, great, my funniest writer, my funniest bit guy just got
And it's stolen. Really The Daily Show. The bits, I mean, maybe they haven't grown into it yet, but it's just not as funny, not as sharp as they used to be. They've lost a lot of good people from that, the correspondence, and it's just not. Stewart's still his stuff. I still watch it for his monologue doing the news, but when they do the correspondence, it's just not as funny. Michael.
Oh.
Is something tickling your fancy?
Oh.
Wait, Mike's on the podcast as
well? You know, many things tickle my fancy. So I thought this week I'd recommend something different. Like, it seems like lately every time I recommend anything, it's either dark or violent or explosions or fistfights. But this time, I thought I'd recommend a light and charming movie that I really liked that came out last year. It's a documentary called The Stories We Tell, and it's about the filmmaker Sarah Polley and her family. But it also touches on themes of legacy and truth.
When you're in the middle of a story, it isn't a story at all, but only a confusion, a dark roaring, a blindness. It's only afterwards that it becomes anything like a story when you're telling it to yourself or to someone else.
Dad, can you just go back over that one line?
I was being so real.
Well, I guess if you could start by describing Mom in as much detail as possible.
Me? Do you want me? Oh, I'm sorry.
Here is a church, and here is a steeple.
She was the most fun I could think of as a child.
She was very warm. She was, you know, full of life. I did sense that she was a woman of secrets. She yearned for more.
I never once lived in between. I was on the fence.
And I remember all of a sudden my mom not being around. And I can remember adults crying.
I guess I'd kind of blocked it. What good is it going to do? You know, the family was a big enough mess.
Mom must have thought, what did I do wrong that led to this?
I told her I would never discuss it with anyone, and I never did.
I think it's our family, and every family has a story.
Nobody ever talked about it.
What do you remember me saying?
My God, all this stuff we've been joking about for years, it's actually true.
I think she maybe realized what her life could be. I think she made a choice to live.
This is a great story. This is a great, great story.
Basically, like, around the time she was a teenager, Polly gradually becomes more and more convinced that the person who she thought was her father isn't her actual birth father. And she eventually goes on like a quest to find out whether this is true or not, and learn more about her mother who died when she was very young. It's basically like a kind of talking head kind of style documentary, but everybody is either like a member of her family or one of her mother's friends or potential fathers. Everybody in it is like super charming and nice, and you really like them. And I love that the awkwardness of interviewing your father and your siblings is addressed at the very beginning, like as she's putting like the microphones on them. They're like, so how do you want me to talk about this? they're looking at her instead of like the camera and stuff. And it was amusing to me that kind of, you're interviewing your family. I'll not spoil what happens, but I thought it was I was interested from like beginning to end, and the reenactments were quite fun. I mean, the actors that they chose for the reenactments were so good that I thought they would really was like home video camera stuff. It also touches on kind of like themes that I thought was kind of neat, like the idea that there's some things that we leave behind when we die that will never really be explained by our, I guess, next of kin. Her mother's motives will never really truly be known, and there's also some debate as to whether you can even talk about her without her defending herself. I thought it was kind of neat. I mean, it's really kind of briefly touched on. It's not like the focus of the documentary, but I thought it was a kind of neat themes that are raised by the documentary. I thought it was really good, and I really liked it. I've been meaning to talk about it for the past year and a half, but other things that came up. So, I was surprised it wasn't nominated for any awards or anything. I really liked it. The Stories We Tell.
If you're hot, a lot of this movie takes place in Canada with a lot of snow, a lot of old footage of snow everywhere and winter coats and scarves. So it might help you cool down.
Yeah. Have some poutine.
She, I mean, I have the Friday the 13th television show that you syndicated.
Uh-huh.
And she's like on the very first one.
Really?
A little girl.
Oh, cool.
She's in, like, Adventures of Baron Munchausen. She's, wow. Yeah, she started out at a very young age being an actress.
Wow. Cool. Uh-huh. The Adventures of Baron Munchausen coming next month to the Belcourt. I'm totally going to be there. I love that movie.
Uh-huh. And it's be the only I see it on the big screen. And also Robin Williams.
Yes, Robin Williams connection, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he's the king of the moon, I believe.
She directed Away From Her and Take This Waltz.
Take This Waltz. Yeah.
Away From Her is the one with Julie Christie.
Take This Waltz has Naked Sarah Silver. As she loved mentioning in 3,000 interviews for about a year. Mike, do you want to say anything about Lauren Bacall?
She was great.
All right.
I still haven't watched Key Largo yet, but The Big Sleep is good.
I agree. And then, also, like, a Kiss Mike's Butt news, Ancillary Justice just won the Ann Leckie Award. I mean...
that's a fancy award.
Yeah, she won her own award.
Word scrambled eggs. Ann Leckie... just won the Hugo Award for Ancillary Justice.
I saw that. I felt pretty good.
it swept the big two science fiction awards this year. And, of course, that was your pick for your favorite book of the year.
I hate to brag. Oh, wait. I love to brag.
So, here first at the Pop Maddie Podcast.
So,
Preet.
So Mike is slowly taking over this podcast. But so one more thing. This isn't a correction, but a completion. On the last episode, you mentioned this old D&D, you're dating yourself, by the way, this old D&D campaign setting called Planescape.
I love me some Planescape.
And I talk about the art's really cool. The artist was Tony DiTerlizzi, and the reason I just point him out is, like, he went on to create the Spiderwick Chronicles with Holly Black, which is a really popular children's book series, and that very distinct art style. He brought that to the Planescape campaign. I think it's one of the big reasons of its success. And now he's known even more so, like, outside the world of role-playing games, which is kind of niche. So, Tony DiTerlizzi. Were there any other corrections?
No, we were perfect.
You're pretty good. You're pretty good. Yeah. For more information, you can go to
www.library.nashville.org.
And the theme music is by
Adam Dean.
Adam Dean.
Not Adam McGuinn.
Did you guys see Inception?
I loved it.
Totally changed the subject, right?
Sure.
Okay.
So I just saw it at home for the first time. I don't know why it took me so long to see it.
Oh,
but so at the end, does the top fall or does the top not fall?
Well, from what the top does not fall.
I don't believe the top will ever fall.
It was spinning.
But it's wobbling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in other scenes, the top clearly does fall, right?
Yes, I think that, you know, it's the Mega Scooby-Doo happy ending because he hasn't woken up yet. There we go. Whoobam. That would be, you know.
Yeah.
That was my guess. But, you know, he leaves it up in the air as the debate thing, which I like.
Well, when it got to that shot with the top spinning at the end and it starts to wobble, I was like, cut! Just cut! It has to end right here! This is the perfect ending!
That's what I totally thought. Yes.
And then he cut away. Yes. And I was like, yes! Finally, a movie with a cool ending. Anyway. Yeah, I just saw Inception.
I've thought about it. I haven't ever.
I loved it. I was so excited to see a movie where I could predict everything that was about to happen.
the only I've heard people say that it doesn't make sense, and I do think there were some parts of it that didn't make sense. Like, okay, so here's, I'm just going to put this out here too, if you guys remember it enough. When the van, like, rolls over,
yeah.
Why isn't that the tip that wakes them up in that dream level? Because they're like, well, your inner ear still works. You'll know if you, and even, like, when during that scene, it's like, you'll still get tipped. It's like Gordon Levitt falls out of a chair backwards, but they don't wake up when the van, like, rolls over, like, five times. You know, I didn't.
The thing that kind of, like, threw me out, which wasn't, like, a game breaker, but it kind of bugged me, is that, like, you know, the Japanese guy gets injured at one point.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't they just, like, invent, like, a healing agent or something? They're in dreamland.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
Why can't
dreamland,
they just go to, like, you know.
I thought that had to all be the architect and everything. They had to make that. They had to make everything beforehand, is what I thought.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just thought it was, like, a dramatic thing. Like, they had to do everything much faster now because he's injured and could die and all that kind of stuff. And within
good
the dreams.
Plot device.
And he still does die, right? He still gets stuck in limbo.
Yeah.
If you remember.
Fired
right?
Again,
yeah, if you remember, he does die.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then they bring him out or something.
Yeah, that's the first scene of the movie is the cat. Yeah. I'm going to spoil the spoiler.
Anyway.
I don't need to watch it now. I feel like I was there.
I loved it so much. And he's doing Interstellar this year.
Yeah.
Which I'm also excited to see.
Yes.
And just, I couldn't remember, I'm getting... He's the guy that did Memento, right?
Yes, Memento, one of my favorite movies.
Like, coolest movie he did since Memento. Like, finally that, like, I'm going to actually do something cool with, like, the narrative structure of a movie.
Well, as I recall, Warner Brothers, like, he didn't want to do the third Batman movie. And
yeah.
Warner Brothers is like, we'll give you a pile of money. He's like, I don't care. They're like, we'll let you make any movie you want.
Yeah.
As long as you make a third movie. He's like, well, okay.
Yeah, that's a good deal.
So he did Memento. Or he did Inception.
Because that's the other thing, too. It's like, I cannot believe this made it through Hollywood's, you know what
yeah.
I mean, like, filter machine.
Yeah.
Because this is confusing.
I read multiple articles that said that was an anomaly and that, like, Hollywood executives have no idea why it was popular, you know. And they
which
have
is probably why it was popular.
Yeah.
Because we don't want their stupid drivel that they keep giving us.
This is, okay, here's some things I didn't like. There were still, like, boys and their guns. Oh, guns, guns, guns. Oh, look, there's 10 bad guys, and I have a gun. Ah, yeah.
Come on, 10 for 10.
Yes, 10 for 10. And then the good guys never get shot.
Yeah.
Like 100 bad guys, one good guy on a jet ski, just shooting the item.
Yeah, that's
a
what I thought was cool is Joseph. There were two scenes. All the scenes with Jordan.
Oh, yeah. Gordon, yeah. JGL.
Yeah.
He was great. And,
yeah.
It also has one of the best kissing scenes when he slips that kiss to the Juno girl. I love that. That was just really a brilliant touch in all this madness. And I also, all his stunt work, that's him. I mean, that's all in camera. All that. They were rotating. He was doing that.
Yeah, seeing the behind-the-scenes stuff on that was amazing.
Amazing. Yeah. And that's all in camera. He's doing that himself. And that's what I blew my mind because I thought, man, this is some of the best. It wasn't CGI. CGI sucks. It's doing it.
Yeah. So the other question I thought about was the no gravity scene in the hotel.
Yeah.
Because, like, I guess, like, post-Matrix, I don't know. I'm like, how did they do that? Because, like, that was the first time I've actually seen a special effects shot when I was like, that is really cool. How did they do the no gravity? There's, like, a whole sequence of him for, like.
They actually did move a room around him.
But how's he, like, when they're floating and fighting, how did they make them float and fight? Because it looks like they're, like, that's the best anti-gravity float fight I've ever seen.
No, I don't remember. I just remember, like, it's stuff moving around them, you know. It's not CGI at all. It's like, but they, I remember seeing, like, the room moving and, like, this device thingy.
So not only did they let him make an awesome movie, they gave him a big, fat budget, too.
Yeah.